This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on October 21, 2025 in Goshen, Indiana.
Okay, well, good morning. We greet you in Jesus' name as well. And it's always a joy when you travel a distance and then you find yourself in a group of Anabaptist Christian businessmen. It's we always appreciate that. And I just want to say, too, that I really did appreciate our first topic by Paul. And I was thinking that maybe the one sentence challenge that we jotted down from that was like to understand that business is a mission, and then to take the opportunities that we have right in front of us today to act on that. So we really, really did appreciate that. So our topic is right people, right seats. There's like four different areas that we want to focus on. The first is working styles and personalities, and then working together, yes or no, emotional maturity, and then if we have time, pouring into our young potentials. So I've heard said already that purpose is when the passion in your heart and the talents that God has gifted you with, they intersect for God's glory. So when the passion and the zeal and the desires in your heart, when that intersects with the giftings, like the talents that God has given you, that's where you find your purpose. And when we see the right people in the right seats, I think that's what we see. Their passions, their talents, their gifts have come together, and you see that as they go about their daily duties. So I want to start with a story. So about 20 or 25 years ago, I had been given the challenge of leading our powder coating division, and we stepped into that. And it was a part of our family of companies that had been growing very rapidly. And so just 2 years prior to us having stepped into this, we had launched our third powder coating location, and that's capital intensive. You buy land, build a building, put the equipment in, get it up and running. But I started to realize that something wasn't quite right, and in other words, I started to think that I don't think we have a healthy company, a healthy business here. We were losing money, and it was at a point where we couldn't say that, well, it's all because of this startup. We were beyond that now. We should have been at a place where this was working and being profitable. And so one day I sat down with what I'll call the founder of that business division, and I wanted to understand like what's different today than what it would have been 4 years prior, when things were doing well, doing okay. So we were discussing this, talking about it, and you know, I'll never forget, it was at one point in that conversation, he looked at me and he had what I'll just describe as that deer in the headlights look. And he said, "Roger, I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what's going on." And as I left that day, I felt the burden or the challenge or the responsibility in a way that I had never felt before. I was inexperienced. I had no idea what I was doing. And I just felt like I'm in over my head. I'm in a situation here that I am not sure. I'm not sure what I'm even going to do. So a long story short, I'll just mention like, I'll go right to the action that ended up happening in this story. So what we did is we pulled together a leadership team. in the multitude of counsel, there's safety, always. So we pulled together a leadership team. I think it was around five people primarily. And so the one person we kind of tasked as our lead salesman, sales manager, and he was given the responsibility of going out and connecting with our customer base, like figuring out like what brought value to them and what else, like what other opportunities would be out there. And so that's what he was tasked with. There was another member on our team who he was very gifted with working with people, getting folks to work together. And we gave him responsibility over the plants, like over the production. And his responsibility was to get things flowing, get folks working together, have folks show up with the same goal in mind. And so that's what he got busy doing. Our founder, who was an intense enterpriser, he was the fellow that if there was something in production that wasn't working right, you would call him in, and he was the kind of person that could figure it out. He was very, very gifted in that. And so that's what he was focusing on. And for myself, I kind of went back office and dug into like cost analysis. So how are we quoting? How are we bidding and initiating cost studies for different jobs? And in other words, trying to understand all the nitty-gritty behind the P&L, behind the profit and loss statement, trying to get an understanding of what was going on there. And then we would meet once a week, maybe more times than that, just depending. And we'd say, what are you learning? And what are you learning? And from those huddles, there would be sometimes we'd make a decision and we'd go in this direction. Like maybe the person that was interacting with our customers would say, well, we're spending all this time doing this and it's not even bringing value. The customer doesn't appreciate it. Well, then let's stop doing that and let's focus on the things that do bring value. And I just want to say that in about 12 months, the financial hemorrhage had stopped. And in a total of 36 months, we were back to having a comfortably, financially profitable entity. Now, you could have walked in any of these plants at any of these times, and it probably would have looked the same 4 years prior, 3 years prior, whatever. But we were back to being successful in business. I want to share that there's not one single person that can take the credit for that. There is not one single person. The success was that there was multiple people with different giftings and different styles that they got their heads together and they figured it out. Right people in the right seats. When the passion and the desires in your heart intersect with the talents, the giftings that God has given you, you find your purpose. And there's amazing things that can happen with that. What I'd like to do now is just share some of what we saw with the different styles, the different working styles and personalities. There's four that I want to mention. So the first one is the enterpriser. So the enterpriser, by the way, enterprisers are exciting people to work with. They are fun. They are full of ideas, like 15 new ideas every single day, I believe. They're starters. They get things rolling. They're risk takers. Like they just jump and then they try and figure out later how. They're very resourceful. They'll take something that looks like nothing and turn it into something somehow. That's the enterpriser. And they're very needed. We need enterprisers. They're amazing people. Now some of the downside to an enterpriser is that they despise routine. Don't try and stick an enterpriser in a strict routine. That's kind of like trying to stick a cat in a box. Doesn't work real well. Enterprisers don't like strict disciplined routine. And because of that, they can be disruptive sometimes. And I've said it already, they're usually fairly noisy people. Like they think out loud. They their ideas are just, they just flow. Like those 15 ideas, they share them with everybody that they meet. And it can be disruptive because sometimes folks might take that as an order or a directive and they get started on doing something to later find out that, oh, that was just another one of the ideas. So that's the enterpriser. Next, what we saw was the achiever. So achievers are, they're amazing people as well. They're relentless. Achievers are relentless. They get it done no matter what. They're the first to show up in the morning and probably the last one to leave. And if a customer called and said, I need 100 widgets and I need them in blue and I need them by 5 o'clock, the achiever figures out how to make that happen. But even better, if that customer calls in around noon and says, by the way, I need 150, and I was wrong, they need to be yellow, not blue, no worries. The achiever will figure out how to make that happen. The achiever gets it done. They're amazing people. We need them. Now, some of the downside is that they despise the constraints of defined processes that might get in the way of them being able to get done what needs to be done by the end of the day. And because of that, they're not always team-minded. If you get in the way of those 150 widgets by yellow by the end of the day, you'll probably get run over because the achiever is going to get it done. They work hard. They're amazing people. We need our achievers. The things that they despise are like the quality checks or the double counting. They don't waste time on that because they're going to have it done by 5 o'clock. The next style is the systematizer. Now, as systematizers are people that I admire. We need systematizers. They're the ones that they're focused. They are process-oriented. They're precise. They're detailed. They have all the bases covered. Like you can go to a systematizer and say, well, what if this happens? Well, they'll say, no worries. I got a plan. If this happens, then we'll do that. That's the systematizer. What systematizers do is they bring order to chaos. Systematizers bring order to chaos. And we can't do without them. Now, some of the downside to a systematizer is that they need a lot of clarity because they build these foolproof systems. They're risk averse. They'd rather spend time overbuilding the plan than be surprised by something they hadn't expected. They fear the unknown because they want to know what's going to happen today. Systematizers are very important, and we can't do without them. The fourth style, then, is the harmonizer. And that's exactly what they do. They harmonize. They will buffer between the tensions of your people. They'll negotiate. They'll go to Sam and say, John didn't really mean that. Here's what he meant. They negotiate, they interpret. They bring harmony. They promote harmony in the different styles of folks working together. Some of the downside to the harmonizer is that they lose sight of the goal. They're so busy trying to keep everybody happy that they forget what needs to be done by 5 o'clock. And they may blur the lines of responsibility just to keep the peace. The enterpriser, the achiever, and the systematizer, that is who you are. Those are the talents that God has given you. Some have been given the talents of being an enterpriser. Others are an achiever. Still others are systematizers. Those are the talents that God has given you. The harmonizer, most times, is a learned style. Harmonizers, most times, that's a learned style. And I'd like to talk a little bit more about that later. So now I thinking about right people in the right seats. We just talked about four different styles of working styles. I want to tell a little bit of a parable or maybe an allegory of what I saw taking place in those three critical years within our powder coating company. So back to the Enterpriser. The Enterpriser, he's that fellow that's going to have 15 new ideas every single day. There's like light bulbs that are like constantly popping on in his head. That's the Enterpriser. And then one day, something actually takes off. Something happens. He finds himself in business. And I think even to their own surprise at times, they're making and selling a product or a service or whatever. They find themselves in business. And there's some thunderstorms and turbulence in that, but they are. They're providing, they're in business and they're offering something to the marketplace. They're selling and people are paying them for whatever it is that they're doing. And they're living their purpose. That is something that they enjoy. They're having a good time. But then, with this business, it keeps growing. There's more and more orders. They get to a point where there's some more turbulence. There's a few more thunderstorms, and it could be that you just can't keep up. There's too many orders, and this Enterpriser finds himself stuck in this routine of always taking care of the next customer. In the meantime, he's having those 15 new ideas every day, but he can't even get time to do that because he's so busy taking care of the next order, the next customer. And so an Enterpriser, he'll do what an Enterpriser does. Is, I need help, and he'll go hire someone. It's like, well, can you make the payroll? Well, I'm not sure. We'll figure that out later, but I need someone to come in. And so he goes and he hires the Achiever. And so the Achiever comes in, and the Achiever is going to do everything that was kind of driving the Enterpriser crazy. He's the first one in. He gets these orders taken care of. He gets them out by the end of the day, and it actually works. And he's enjoying that. He enjoys that challenge, the Achiever. So guess what? Now the Enterpriser no longer has to do that. So he's back to his 15 new ideas every single day. And he's a risk taker. He's a starter. He's an initiator. And he gets some more things going. And the business keeps growing. So it's him, it's the Enterpriser, and it's the Achiever. And the business keeps growing. And then one day, the Achiever calls the Enterpriser, and there's a few more thunderstorms. There's some more turbulence. He's totally overloaded. He's burned out. He just can't do more. You can only do more for so long, but there comes a point when you put another watermelon on the wagon, there's two that fall off, right? And that's the point that he's at, because the business kept growing and he just can't. And as a matter of fact, the Enterpriser's not very happy anymore either, because he's always having to come in trying to help take care of these problems. So they get their heads together and they hire in the Systematizer. And if you remember the Systematizer, they bring order to chaos. They're very focused, process-oriented, they're detailed, have all the bases covered. And in this situation, there's a lot of chaos. And so the Systematizer comes in and he starts doing what he does best. And to the Enterpriser and to the Achiever's surprise, things just kind of calm down, and so the Enterpriser gets back to doing what he likes to do. That's his 15 new ideas every day. He's a risk taker. He's a starter. He's an Enterpriser. He gets things going, and the Achiever, he's having a good time because he's carrying out a bunch of this stuff that the Enterpriser's getting started, and the Systematizer, he's running this business, and it keeps growing, and they're all having a good time. Then one day, the Systematizer says, hey, we need to have a meeting. He sits down with the Enterpriser and the Achiever, and he is frustrated. Because every time he calms this chaos, guess what shows up? It's more chaos, because the Enterpriser had another new idea, and the Achiever got it started, and he's left to deal with this chaos. And he's like, I'm done. I can't take any more of this. And I want to say here that this This is a critical point. This is a very, very critical point, because every one of those people is needed. They're all needed. The enterpriser, the achiever, the systematizer, they're all needed. They're all important. But at this point, they feel like choking each other because it's a frustration. The enterpriser, he feels suffocated because he can't get to his new ideas every single day. The achiever, he's burned out. He just cannot do more. The systematizer, he's done with all this unending chaos, always more chaos. But they're all needed. Thankfully, they get their heads together and they say, we're going to hire the harmonizer. And we're going to give him the leadership role in our company so that we can all get back to doing what we need to do. And so they hire the harmonizer. The harmonizer comes in, he finds his place, and he gets to work doing what he does best. And that's promoting harmony amongst these different styles. He helps discover solutions that allows the enterpriser to do what God has gifted him with. He allows the achiever to carry out these things that others just can't. He allows the systematizer to help build systems and process that calm the chaos. He's also very busy resolving conflict that happened between these different styles, because that's a given. There will be conflict, and the harmonizer works very hard at trying to help. He works very hard at bringing harmony. And so with these efforts, what we see taking shape is that this machine starts running like on all the gears, like a well-oiled machine. All these talents, all these styles, very important. They're needed. They're needed for this business operation. And when you have that working together, it's amazing what can happen. When you have a business where people have found their purpose and they're doing what they're gifted at doing for the sake of this operation, it's amazing. It is amazing what can happen. And again, the truth is that, well, let me just say this. So thinking about the harmonizer, so anyone, the achiever, the enterpriser, the systematizer, any one of those can become the harmonizer. Any one of those styles can become the harmonizer. Most times, the harmonizer is a learned skill. But we have to be careful, because there's always that turbulence. There's always those thunderstorms that show up. And if he's not careful, if they're not careful, it's like throwing sand into these gears. There's friction. There's things that start to happen. And I was talking with a businessman once, and it's him and a couple of his sons, and they're in some type of a metal forming business. And he was sharing with me how, he's dealing with this conflict. Like he said, I have two sons. And he went on to explain them. He said, the one is, he just has all these ideas, and he thinks we ought to be doing this and we ought to be doing that. And he's relentless in that. Like always, it's never good enough. We should always, and these ideas. And then he said, my other son, He's very structured. He's very process oriented, and he's like, he has helped our business like stabilize, and he said I could sense in this dad that he was at the point where his enterpriser son, he was ready to just minimize him, because his systematizer son had brought a lot of calm to the chaos. And so I told him this allegory. And he was sitting there listening. They were at our house. Finally, he was at the edge of the couch. And I just said, listen, if I just invite you to consider, like, how will you become the harmonizer? Because you need both of your sons. You need both of them in this business. If you're a visionary, your enterpriser son leaves because he's just frustrated, and all you have left is the systematizer, there will come a day, when you may find that your business starts to dwindle because there's not new energy, new ideas, new thoughts. Like that, those 15 ideas, maybe there's one out of the year that you actually that you work on and implement and bring in. But that's what keeps life in your business. So what could the sand be? Thinking of throwing sand into the gears, I just want to give a couple examples. One of them is that if you need a systematizer, don't fill a role with an enterpriser. That can be sand in the gears, or vice versa. Another one is that a position can actually outgrow a person. So if you have, think of a department leader or whatever, like a position, if the business is growing, and if that leader doesn't grow and develop, the business can actually overrun him at some point. That can be sand in the gears. I interact with another business leader, and their business is growing rapidly. I mean, it is aggressive growth. And this is a real challenge for them, like staying front side on their leadership. What can happen in those cases is you take your best salesman and you promote him to sales manager, when really he's not a manager, he's a great salesman. Those kinds of things cause trouble and chaos later on. And I'll just say, in a family business, it can be family dynamics, can be sand in the gears. You can end up with situations where it's family member against family member. There's odds. Son against father, father against son, brother against brother, or however. Family dynamics can be sand in the gears. And if the harmonizer isn't paying attention to that, the friction, it continues to build, and you end up with people that are hurt, there's annoyance, frustration, a whole list of things. And finally, what's left is broken relationships, broken business, a broken witness for Christ. So the harmonizer has a full-time job. I'd like to talk about some of the things that help the harmonizer be who he needs to be. So, it's emotional maturity. So what is emotional maturity? I have four different points that I like to just point to. There would be more, but for the sake of this presentation, there's four. The first one is self-aware. So having the ability to recognize and understand your own moods and emotions and the effects that they have on the people that you're interacting with, the people that you're working with. Emotional maturity, it's being so self-aware. The next one is other aware. So self-aware and other aware. Having the ability to recognize and understand another person's personality. So are you relating to the enterpriser or the systematizer, or being able to understand that, understand who you're relating to? And then it's self-regulation. Having the ability to control or redirect disruptive impulses and moods, willing to suspend judgment, such as to think before acting or speaking. I've heard this described already as having the ability to idle your engine when on the inside you feel like ripping the gears. Self-regulation, self-control. And then the fourth is empathy. So understanding the emotional makeup of other people and treating them according to their emotional well-being, because you truly care about them. Empathy. Are you working with someone that had a very different story than you did? Having empathy towards them, caring. Maybe you're working with some young person that has a lot of growing up to do yet, like earning their trust and their respect so that you in turn can speak into their life and help them mature and grow and develop empathy. So self-aware, other-aware, self-regulation, and empathy. I'd like to just share a story now that I think that just describes all of this in action. So when I, as a boy growing up, there was a deacon that served in a sister congregation of ours there in our area. And this story would have been shared at his funeral, if I remember correctly. And it was, so during his deacon work, there was a time when his bishop came to him and said, "Hey, there's a brother in the church that there's, I don't know what was going on, but there was a tension, there was something going on, and he needed this deacon to work with that situation." And so this deacon said, "Yeah, he will do that. He will see what he can accomplish." And then it was several weeks later, this bishop asked him, he said, "Hey, how's it going? Just curious, been thinking about you and this work." And this deacon responded, and he said, "You know, I haven't talked to this brother yet. But," he said, I will soon. I plan to soon." And he went on to say that the reason he hadn't is because he's committed that he will not go and talk to this brother until the only emotion he has in his heart for this brother is love. And he said, "I'm just not quite there yet. The only emotion for this brother is love. And he's committed he will not go until he feels like that's where he's at." You know, I wouldn't doubt that this deacon was probably spending time in prayer and fasting. Maybe some for this other brother, but probably more for himself in his own preparation, his own preparedness to go and have this difficult conversation. You see, I think this deacon was self-aware. I think he understood that he himself was not in the right frame of mind to approach this person. And I think he was other aware. I think he realized that his current attitude would probably be like throwing sand into the gears. I believe he understood who this other brother was. And I think he was able to self-regulate, self-control, not going when he knew that his heart was not quite prepared. Why? Because I think he had empathy, true love. He wanted the outcome for this to be successful, and he realized that there was a lot hinging on his shoulders and his own preparedness and his own humility, his own love for this situation. He didn't just check the box to get it taken care of, but he took time to prepare. And I think that that's emotional maturity. If you bring acceptable levels of emotional maturity into the relationships of the different styles, I think there's amazing things that can happen. And I want to share with you five questions I'll give it as a challenge. Find someone that you work with closely and interact with, someone that you know will be honest with you, and ask them these five questions. So the first one is, in moments of stress or pressure, how does my behavior impact the people around me? In moments of stress or pressure, how does it impact the people around me? One of our senior managers was just recently shared a story of how he had worked for a car rental company many years ago. And he was saying how Monday mornings were intense, like people were showing up, they needed their vehicles. And he said there was one morning, just another Monday, very intense. And there was a customer came in, and he said, "I picked up a set of keys," and he said, I threw them across the room at one of my young employees. And he said, "I barked out the orders, get this car, bring it to the front for this customer." And he said, "I was off to the next thing." And he said later, after the chaos had kind of calmed, it so happened that the regional manager was there. And so they went to connect and have a little bit of a meeting. And he said, the regional manager just kind of walked into the room and he picked up a set of keys and he said he threw them at me. And he said, "You are a rude and an obnoxious boss to work for." It surprised him. And he said his boss went on to tell him, he said that young employee is at a very impressionable age. And he said, "You treated him like that. You have in your hand the opportunity to take this young man and set him on a course that will benefit him for the rest of his life. And instead, you threw the keys at him." And he told me, he said, "You know, that happened a long time ago." And he said, "I never forgot it. I never forgot it." In moments of stress, how do we react? The next question is, when was the last time that my emotional reaction was out of proportion to the situation? So last year I was down in Mexico. I was getting a tour of a business. It was the owner and some of his sons working this. And I noticed that as we were going through, he would go and talk to his employees. And it left a little bit of an impression because it wasn't just a, "Hi, good morning, how are you doing?" I could tell it was like an intense conversation. And the employee would be very attentive, and then they would kind of relax and smile, and he'd go on to the next one. And so later that evening, he said, "You know," he said, I should probably tell you. He's like, I don't know if you noticed me talking to all my employees or not. I said, "But I was actually asking them for forgiveness." He's like, "Just yesterday," he's like, "we had a situation." He said, "I blew up." And he said, "My son later reprimanded me and said, 'Dad, you can't act like that.'" Like that. And he said, "My son was helping me become a little more self-aware." And he said, "I realized he was right." So he was apologizing one by one to each one of these employees as they went through the plant. I thought that was really amazing. So when was the last time that my emotional reaction was out of proportion? The third question is, when I'm in disagreement, do I focus on genuinely listening to understand the other person's perspective? Do I really focus on listening? Or do I somehow think, well, when they're done talking, I'm going to tell them how it really is? I think this man from Mexico, I think he really listened to his son. He really listened to the feedback that he had for him. Are there reasons why someone might hesitate to be completely honest with me? So the manager that threw the keys, there's a chance that his employees would have really liked to tell him how obnoxious and rude he is, but they might have not trusted it, because who knows what he would have threw. Are there reasons why someone wouldn't that they might hesitate to be completely honest with me? And then the fifth one is, if a teacher listens to the students will listen to their teacher. The teacher holds in that moment the opportunity to influence the direction of a student. And there's times when those students go on to do amazing things. I'll quickly share some points on thinking of pouring into young leaders, and not just leaders, but pouring into our employees, pouring into their potential. So I think in our businesses, having a culture of learning and development, it's really not optional, but it is our duty. And I think we heard that from Paul this morning. Like it's our duty to use our businesses for the betterment of Christ's kingdom, to be a witness, to help people learn and grow and develop. And I'll just share a couple points here quickly on what that could be. So one of them is that when there's mistakes, we treat those as learning opportunities, not looking who we can blame, but treating them as learning opportunities. Also to encourage autonomy. Like, be a resource for guidance, but learn, have your people learn to think for themselves as well. Give them the autonomy. And sort of with that is delegate ownership, like not just tasks. Provide consistent and actionable feedback. We all benefit from that. Create a culture, create an environment where feedback to help us learn and grow and get better is kind of the norm that happens there. Build on strengths and address areas for improvement. Have that become a normal conversation in and amongst your teams. Create stretch opportunities. Like intentionally, if you're leading a department or people, intentionally assign tasks and projects that are just beyond their reach and then support them with that. Stretch them. Let them grow and learn and develop. That's how leaders can stay ahead of the growth within their companies. Stretch, grow, learn, develop. And always give credit where credit is due. And with that, it's healthy accountability. And healthy accountability, I think, recaps all the points that we have here on our slide. And I'll just share yet some things that actually can stifle the growth of your people. And most of these are basically a reverse of some of the things that we looked at. One of those is excessive micromanagement. When you expect your people to be your robots, but they shouldn't think for themselves. Excessive micromanagement. That'll stifle the growth of your people. Shutting down ideas. And kind of presenting this air of that if it's not my idea, it's probably not a great idea. Shutting down ideas. That'll stifle growth. Punishing initiative. Maybe someone took a chance to try and get those 150 widgets out by the end of the day, but it didn't go quite right. And then they're punished for that. Don't punish initiative. Vague or absent feedback. If you're not providing guidance and feedback where they do well, where they can improve, that'll stifle the growth of your people. And ignoring development, just thinking that it's not worth the time. Developing your people is always worth the time. And not giving credit where credit is due. That'll stifle the growth of your people. All of that is suppressing talent. And so we invite you to consider how can you foster a culture of learning and development within your business, within your organization. So in conclusion, learn to understand and appreciate the enterpriser, the achiever, and the systematizer. And the value of the harmonizer. And I invite you to consider your own emotional maturity and continue growing in that. We can always keep growing in our own emotional maturity. Become more self-aware, more other-aware, more self-regulated, and having more empathy towards the people that God has entrusted into your care. And I want to just conclude with 2 Peter Chapter 1, verses 5 to 8. This is the scripture reference that we've embraced in our family of companies, and we feel like it's very foundational to our own growth. And it is that, it says that, but also for this very reason, giving all diligence, like being intentional, being purposeful, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge. To knowledge, self-control. To self-control, perseverance. To perseverance, godliness. To godliness, brotherly kindness. And to brotherly kindness, love. And it goes on to say that, for if these are yours and abound, if this is yours and growing, you will be neither barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. Thank you.